I had dressed for Chestnut Hill. A button-down Tattersall shirt that Susan had bought me, crisp dress khakis, a navy blazer with gold buttons, and a pair of well-broken-in loafers worn without socks. The lack of socks implied a devil-may-care attitude understood by the wealthy. Even though the wealthy individual I was calling on today was a 260-pound NFL linebacker with a 20-inch neck named Kinjo Haywood. I'd seen Kinjo toss around quarterbacks like rag dolls and doubted that he'd notice the missing socks. Kinjo's agent had sent a private car for me. A private car was not needed or requested to find Chestnut Hill, but there were some ground rules that had to be discussed on the ride over. I tried to remain attentive and alert as we turned off Route 9 and made our way up and around on Heath Street. The homes were very old and stately, with lots of brick and ivy. The leaves had started to turn loose on the oak branches overhead. As we drove, it all felt like a ticker tape parade.
"You can't discuss this case with anyone, Mr. Spencer," said Stephen Rosen, Kinjo's agent. He was a beefy guy with thick black hair and dark, humorless eyes. He smelled like a quart of Brut aftershave and was dressed in a pinstriped suit with wide lapels and a purple shirt open at the neck.
"Will he sign my bubblegum card?" I said.
"You're trying to be funny," Rosen said, making a sour face. "But Boston is a sports-crazy town, and everyone is up in Kinjo's business. If it gets out he's hired a private investigator, this thing will become even more of a pain in the ass."
"Mum's the word."
"And this all may turn out to be nothing."
"Of course."
"And we're straight on the fee offered?"
"No."
"No?"
I told him my standard rate.
"Seriously?"
I nodded modestly. "As you know, a fee separates the pro from the amateur."
"Okay, okay."
The town car slowed and we dipped down off the road past the stone fence and toward a very large stone house with two identical white Cadillac Escalades parked outside. Before the driver got out, I opened my door and waited for Rosen to follow. The air smelled of a good fire burning and crisp autumn sunshine. A brisk wind warned of cold days to follow. The front door opened. Rosen ushered us toward the brick walkway. He seemed less than enthused with having to clean up the latest mess for his client. An old woman with copper-colored skin and dressed in a gray maid's uniform led me into the foyer. The foyer led into a great room, where a very large black man was watching an old samurai movie on a very large television. A skinny white woman with enormous breasts and blonde hair sat across from him, drinking a red drink in a martini glass. The furniture was all leather and glass and too modern for such an old house.
"What's up, Kinjo?" Rosen said. "My main man."
Kinjo pressed pause on the DVD player. He looked up, surprised that he had guests, and stood up as if he'd been dozing. The woman with the large breasts continued to sip her drink. She wore a white tank top with gold embroidery, gold hoop earrings, and blue jeans so tight they might have been applied by Earl Scheib. Kinjo was much larger than me. I wasn't used to meeting anyone larger than me except for Hawk, and Hawk stood only a half inch taller. Kinjo was made of muscle the way a jaguar is all muscle. He moved with a strong confidence, eyes shifting from me to Rosen to his wife with just a flick. He had a mustache and a goatee and kept his hair in long cornrows. He wore a light blue Adidas tracksuit and no shoes. I'd read that he was 27, a Pro Bowl selection for the last 2 years, and faster than a cheetah.
"You the detective?" Kinjo said.
"Yep."
"You look like a detective. Or a cop."
A cop would have worn socks,